Hello, everyone. Joshua Gilliland here, one of the founding attorneys of The Legal Geeks. With me is my good friend Janina Scarlett from Superhero Therapy. Janina, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are
Fantastic, thank you. We are here for part three of our Star Wars 40th anniversary saga, this time with Return of the Lawyer. Thinking back to Return of the Jedi, we have at the end effectively the return of Anakin, that Vader's redemption takes place and he becomes Anakin Skywalker once again. Getting into, the legal issues of that is interesting analysis for us because we want to understand whether or not Anakin or Vader, depending on your point of view on this, when he turned to the dark side, did he understand the wrongfulness of his actions? And thinking back to Revenge of the Sith, you've written about Anakin and his turn. I want to get your thoughts on what caused him to turn and whether or not he understood the wrongfulness of his actions.
So personally, I think that Anakin had a lot stacked against him. He was just a little boy when he was taken away from his mom after being raised in slavery, without any kind of assurance that his mom would be safe, and thrown into this really judgmental and critical atmosphere where everyone seemed to be against him. Yoda from the start was saying that Anakin was too old to be trained, and most of the Jedi Council was suspecting him to not turn out so well, and they were almost chastising him for being too old or too strong or having too many midichlorians. And the only person that showed him any love and compassion was, other than Obi-Wan, was Palpatine. And so Anakin, over time, seems to have developed this father-son kind of relationship with Palpatine, where Palpatine is kind of the parental figure. And I think all of this was within Palpatine's plan to make sure that Anakin had his loyalties to him. And then, of course, after Anakin's mom is killed, he really, really struggles. He goes on this vengeful killing that is completely against the Jedi Code. And then after that, when Padme is pregnant and he believes that she's going to die, he starts having nightmares that he's going to lose her. He's desperate. The love of his life might potentially die according to his vision. And he, after losing his mother, after not having a lot of people that he can rely on and trust, Anakin is understandably trying to save her. And I think this plays directly into Palpatine's plan, who then seduces Anakin by telling him that he can save Padme if Anakin joins the dark side. I think that Anakin did know the consequences of his actions, but I think that at that time he didn't think that he had a choice. I think he acted out of passion. I think he acted because he was trying to save a person that he loved, much more so than to try to intentionally hurt someone else.
That's interesting analysis of, on one level, it's the writing of the prequels of basically all the, all the cards were stacked against Anakin, but there's criminal liability for his actions because it doesn't sound like there is a mental defect at issue, getting into the rules of the insanity defense. If there's disease, defect, something along those lines that would make him incapacitated to know right from wrong, he knows it's wrong. Now, breaking down, those issues a little bit more, killing the Tusken Raiders, that sounds like, total insanity defense would be appropriate there because arguably it is a hate crime, slaughtering all of them, even the women and children, because of their race is the absolute definition of a hate crime under state and federal law.
Right.
The rage that he felt, the, you know, impact of his mother's death, you know, that could be argued, I think, successfully, that he didn't understand the wrongfulness of his actions at that point in time. But fast forward to either beheading Count Dooku or slaughtering Jedi and slaughtering a room of children, those were all choices he made. And the necessity of defense or defense of others does not permit you to murder other people. Now,
right.
So, I mean, it's a legally, it's highly problematic for him.
Exactly.
That's bad. Let's, you are quite knowledgeable about Star Wars with all that you've written. What are your thoughts on the nature of the dark side? For those who follow it, is it a choice for them or is it an addiction?
I think it depends on the individual. I think for some, it's a choice. I think that for someone like Anakin, I don't think he felt that it was a choice. I think he believed that it was the only way he could save Padme. I think he was desperate. I think over time, for people that join the dark side, it can become an addiction. We know that when people experience a lot of anger, their bodies release certain chemicals like endorphins and dopamine that can, in fact, become addicting. And it is possible that at least some people are addicted or very much seduced by the dark side and maintain their connection with it because of its immediacy, because of the immediate satisfaction and rewards that they receive. Whereas the light side is more challenging. There is a lot more delay of gratification. There is a lot more need to be humble and to practice mindfulness as opposed to immediate gratification. So I think for some people, it might be the unwillingness to experience difficult emotions and the unwillingness to wait for a reward.
What would you say about his mental state and relationship with the dark side when we see him again in Rogue One, where he's in the healing tank and that's the only thing that gives him, you know, some physical comfort from his now 20-year-old injuries that include a loss of all limbs, you know, massive burns over all of his body. At that point, would, you know, the rage that fuels him, would he be addicted to that, or do you think he's choosing it?
It's hard to say. I wish I could have spent some time with him. It would be interesting to have someone like Vader or have Darth Vader in the session so that I could further assess him. We see him so briefly in Rogue One that it's really hard to say, but of course in A New Hope, we see him a little bit longer when he's threatening Leia, and he seems emotionless. He seems numb to me, both at the end of Rogue One and in the beginning of A New Hope. So I thought that at this point, it's just carrying out his duty, but to me, he seems detached. There are times when we see him getting frustrated and getting angry and choking members of the dark side, but in that moment, to me, he seemed numb.
What about cutting through all the rebel troopers on the perfunctory? Granted, it's tough to know his, you know, mental state because he's wearing a mask and you can't see, you know, facial expressions. But he's
right.
He slaughters them.
And it's hard to tell. As you said, he's wearing a mask. So from not seeing his facial expression, it is very hard to understand fully what's happening. However, just by judging his judging his movements, they're slow and calculated. And when he loses the plans, he seems kind of upset by this, but at the same time, he doesn't, unlike Kylo Ren later in episode 7, he doesn't start destroying things. He seems very methodical to me at this point. He almost reminds me of Thrawn from Rebels.
At the beginning of A New Hope, you know, when he kills Captain Antilles, you know, we see rage there, you know, yelling at the troops to tear the ship apart and bring me the passengers. I want them alive. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, sounds like rage. And
yes,
and granted, you know, the exchange with Leia where she says, "I have no idea what you're talking about." That is now the funniest line in all of the saga because of the events of Rogue One. So I could see, I can see him being highly angry about that and why he was yelling and threatening and murdered a guy.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the film, there's a lot of that cold, calculated drug the princess in order to find the location, threaten her. Though there's a lot of, you know, that's mostly Tarkin at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting. Very interesting to get your thoughts. What are your thoughts on him, you know, when he, knowing how he can fight, when he confronts Luke in Empire, you know, it, arguably he was holding back. He was just toying with him. Fighting one-handed, just taunting Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
I imagine that he probably sensed who Luke was right away, and I think that he, in some ways, was trying to protect him. When he goes to the Emperor, he convinces the Emperor to try to let him convert Luke to the dark side. And I believe that Vader did that more to protect Luke than to truly try to bring him to the dark side. I think that once Vader recognizes who Luke is, he is trying to save him. He's trying to not hurt him as much as possible. I think that this is the first time this sense of love and connection might awaken in him, maybe to some degree.
Did you read the Darth Vader comic by Marvel?
I have not, no. I
highly recommend it. Pick up a trade. It's probably out in trade, and it was 25 issues. And it's set between episodes 4 and 5. With Vader finding out, you know, Luke Skywalker's identity, and when he finds out that his name is Skywalker, his reaction to that, and the realization that Palpatine lied to him, and then his secret behind, you know, backdoor dealings in order to find out as much as possible about Luke. And including, you know, finding out about the autopsy that was on Padme. So, I mean, a lot there and a great read in filling in the blanks between episodes 4 and 5. Highly recommend it. Highly recommend it.
Great. Thank you.
So, and then they did a big crossover called Vader Down, which was also good. Because part of it takes place at an old abandoned Jedi temple, and Obi-Wan starts taunting Vader with, "You've become everything you've hated, everything you swore to fight," and so he's highly recommend checking it out.
Okay, that sounds great.
Which then brings us to Return of the Jedi with the ultimate conversion and, you know, in coming back. What's your thoughts on, you know, what prompted that?
Can you please repeat the question?
Yeah, what are your thoughts on what finally convinces Vader to choose not to follow the dark side?
That's a great question. I think when he's fighting Luke and Luke refuses to kill him, I think that something awakens in Vader in terms of seeing that this is my son and I can't do this. I think that this is something that was a long way coming from the moment that Vader realizes that Luke is his son. And like I said, I do believe that when Vader tries to convince Palpatine to bring Luke to the dark side, I do think Vader's doing it in order to try to protect Luke. But I think that it was kind of a long way coming. And then during the fight, I think Vader sees how unwilling Luke is to switch the dark side and to hurt him. And then in seeing that Palpatine is now trying to hurt his son after being at least an indirect cause of Padme's death. And I think at that point, Vader is not willing to give Palpatine one more sacrifice, to give him another family member. And at that point, I think he recognizes that he needs to stand up for his son. He needs to protect him, no matter the cost.
So let's take this a step further. You know, with the first two parts, we have lawyers and a judge talking about why they love Star Wars. You're the non-lawyer in our group.
That's true.
Why do you think, you know, the public, all of us, you know, have such love for Star Wars?
I think it's a story that transcends time. You know, I think, you know, if when you first break it down, when you first look at the main themes, it is a fight of good and evil. But at the same time, it's a lot more complicated than that. We can see some redeeming qualities on the dark side, and then we can see some imperfections on the light side. We are seeing worlds that have been so oppressed by warfare and discrimination, and the fight for absolute power and corruption and control being overcome by a few who finally stand up to injustice and bring hope. And I think it's the good guy winning, but it's not only that. I think it's the underdog standing up to the big bully. And I think it's, in a lot of ways, it's a very common story, one that a lot of us can relate to, and also one that we all need in a lot of ways. When we're faced with injustice, when we're faced with discrimination, we want to see that. We want to see that a few people can make a very big difference, even if they're faced with someone really big and really scary and very powerful. I think that we need this sense of hope in order to have this sense of purpose.
You know, you use, you know, superhero therapy in a very innovative way to help people. Have you used Star Wars in the same way?
Absolutely. So superhero therapy entails using pop culture, any pop culture, not only traditional superheroes, but also characters from fantasy and science fiction, in order to teach individuals to draw parallels between their own experiences and the experiences of their favorite characters, in order to teach the individual to become their own version of a hero, or as I call them, a superhero. But that could be done through someone's connection to Luke Skywalker, for example, or Ezra Bridger. Like it could be Ezra Bridger, excuse me. So this could be any kind of connection. So I do use Star Wars in therapy quite a bit. Actually, I have a lot of patients that really like Star Wars, and we talk about the use of the Force in therapy. We talk about mindfulness. we talk about acceptance, the willingness to experience things we cannot change. We talk about non-attachment to outcome and compassion as the Jedi core values and as some of the qualities and skills that we can learn in therapy so that the individual can become their own version of a Jedi.
So with in no way breaching any HIPAA issues, what are some of the characters from Star Wars that you've seen people either identify with or want to either emulate or that they use in their therapy?
There are a number. So I've used Vader quite a bit to talk about redemption. I've seen a lot of individuals, for example, some veterans who believed that because they were involved in the war, that meant that they were not a good person, or because maybe they felt a lot of anger or maybe were more aggressive than they had been in the past, that meant that they were evil somehow. And we talked about redemption. I've used characters from Rebellion, from Rebels, like Hera and Kanan, to talk about how one person can make a really big difference, to talk about action. I've used Princess Leia to talk about discrimination and racism and to pinpoint how a woman can overcome all of that and can make a really, really big difference. So there's been many examples like that that I've been able to incorporate. And then also, like I said, very generally using concepts like the Force. That's something that I incorporate almost daily into therapy in terms of discussing mindfulness and acceptance with my clients.
So thinking about Leia, and again, I don't know how much of this was, you know, intentional writing, storytelling wise, or just a really happy byproduct of the story that was written for A New Hope. She witnesses her planet destroyed. You know, let's yes. say 6 billion people blown up, you know, killed by the Death Star. She doesn't break in any way. In fact, she seems more resolute. And not just cracks, wisecracks with, you know, you're a little short for a stormtrooper, but you know, there's like absolutely no break in will with her resolve to finish the mission to get the plans back to Yavin.
Right.
What are your thoughts on her? And should she have sought some help after those events?
You know, she lost an entire planet that she grew up on. She lost a lot of people that she knew and loved. That being said, Leia is someone that needs to be active in order to recover. Not everyone that is exposed to trauma develops post-traumatic stress disorder. Not everyone that's exposed to trauma needs to seek mental health support. People that struggle with adjustment after a traumatic exposure would benefit from mental health support. That being said, people that are able to connect with other trauma survivors in a similar situation and are able to connect with a sense of purpose are more likely to develop what's called post-traumatic growth, which is meaning, a sense of meaning that comes after a tragedy that allows people to heal and recover. And I think that's exactly what Leia does. She does everything right. She focuses all her grief and all her energy in trying to help the rebellion and in trying to ensure that the Empire stopped. And I think that's what helps her ultimately.
Fascinating. Wow, that is, as always, you're very insightful. And you know, Star Wars is an excellent foil for the law, because I think it's probably the piece of pop culture I've written the most about. There are others that are in a close second and third, but Star Wars, I'm pretty sure, is in first place. I see the same parallel in the healing arts as well, because it's something people can identify with and it can be applied to, which not every medium has that crossover ability, which I think makes this just a really impressive work of art.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Do you remember when you first saw Star Wars?
Yes. So I did not grow up in this country. I came to this country in the late 90s. So the first Star Wars movie I saw was actually Episode One, which I saw in the movie theater when it released. And then after that, I ended up watching Episodes 4, 5, and 6, and then following them as they were releasing the movie theater after that.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Were those VHS tapes or DVDs?
So those were VHS tapes. I actually went to visit a friend of mine that had all of them, and we ended up watching all of them in one day. So we watched 4, 5, and 6 in one day.
Totally normal. it'd be weird not to.
Yes.
Which is your favorite of the films?
Well, that's a really good question. I think it has to be a tie. I really like Empire Strikes Back. That has been my favorite for a long time. And now I think it's a tie between that and Rogue One.
That's kind of funny because I'm in the same boat. For years, I thought Empire was my number one. Star Wars, the original, I think, is the perfect movie because, it has a beginning, middle, end. And Empire does end with the cliffhanger, and I'm fine with that because real life has cliffhangers. That's life. I thought Rogue One was an amazing film, well constructed. It's a modern film, and yet they made it look like it was 1977 again. I mean, I want to go pin a medal on everyone involved in that movie because they let's take a property that's 40 years old and recreate it, including making it look like we're at the original sets. That's amazing. So,
and they did it really, really well.
Yeah, and it's a the cast is representative of many different communities, which I liked a lot. Even though looking at the original Star Wars with all the aliens that are there, like that is super diverse. I lost count how many aliens are in the cantina, but it's a very Rogue One is a very inclusive film with, because representation matters, and that is one of the things I really enjoyed about it. And we'll see what the future brings with The Last Jedi. And now, you met Mark Hamill. You got your picture with him.
I have.
You gave him one of your books.
Yes.
What was that like?
Kind of surreal. It was an unforgettable experience. I went in there and my fiance and I met him, and I briefly just kind of blurted out, "Hey, thank you for all your work, and just want to let you know I use Star Wars and pop culture in therapy." And he's like, "Really? This is great." He's like, "Tell me more." And I was like, "Well, I use it to help people with PTSD, and I wrote this book." He's like, "Oh, this is great. This is fantastic." And I was like, "Would you like a copy?" And he was like, yes, please. And he was just so down to earth and so amazing. I'm not even sure how fast I was talking. I was aware that I was talking really fast from anxiety, but he was so lovely and so supportive. And you know, he was, the way he looks at you, I find that no matter which fan he interacts with, and I've talked to other people about this and they've all had the same experience, he makes you feel as if you're the only person in the room. Like, he never rushes people, even if there's a long crowd of people waiting to talk to him. He'll talk to everyone as long as they're talking to him, and he listens, and he's so graceful and very sweet. It was a very, very wonderful experience.
I'm glad you had that. And I just, I mean, I saw the pictures on Facebook, and it looked super sweet. Just looked amazing. He sounds so genuine and appreciative in interviews, and
he is.
Which is just so nice. I mean, because he is a true fan. He too is a geek, and my read of him is he appreciates everything that he's had because of Star Wars, and
yes.
You know, the Force for Change videos that they were doing with him. You know, photobombing people or yelling no behind them and just their reactions. I don't know how many people he did that to, but it just looks awesome. And he just seems like a really nice human being. And I'm glad you had that experience, because I was, yeah, you, that was at Celebration, wasn't it?
It was. And it was life-changing. It was a beautiful experience.
Did you have a panel there?
No.
Okay. One of the rare times you went just as a fan. So.
Yes, more just to... I did have some meetings and some work-related business, but it was really nice just to kick back and enjoy the show.
That is phenomenal. So... where can people find your book, your blog, all of your social media? Tell us more.
Yeah, so Superhero Therapy is not yet out. It's going to be out in the U.S. on August 1st. So it'll be available everywhere on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all major booksellers. And you can pre-order it now on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Mysterious Galaxy. And I also have another book coming up called Harry Potter Therapy. It's a self-help book for Harry Potter fans, and that will be a free ebook. So I intentionally made it free so that people could get it, and to make it a free resource. So that will be coming out on September 1st, on the Hogwarts Day. And also, I'm in Star Wars psychology. My blog is superhero-therapy.com, and I can be found as Dr. Janina Scarlett pretty much on all social media.
Fantastic. Well, Janina, this is, I know you had a long day because we're recording this after 10 o'clock at night. And just want to thank you for your insight and sharing your love of Star Wars.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And America, this concludes our Star Wars 40th anniversary celebration. And stay geeky, America. Stay geeky.